Sleep No More is being described as a site-specific theatrical event inspired by Shakespeare's Macbeth, presented as Alfred Hitchcock might have envisioned it. Theatergoers wander through the six floors of 100 rooms and 100 rooms that, where they examine artifacts, catch fleeting dramas, and put together a narrative. It was first produced in London, the creation of England's Punch Drunk Theater, and it's making its New York debut at what they're calling the McKittrick Hotel on West 27th Street in Chelsea. I'm very pleased that it brings co-directors Felix Barrett and Maxine Doyle to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Now, your production has been described as theater that people go into rather than to. What inspired this kind of interactive production?
I think it was just a rejection of the passive obedience that's kind of at the core of your average theatrical experience.
Maybe we go in, we sit down.
And it's also
turn off our cell phones.
And we switch off our bodies and we switch off a lot of our minds because it's also formulaic. I think we wanted to try and create something that made theatre dangerous again so that you had to be responsive and you had to trust your instinct within it rather than just lie back.
Yeah, we wanted to make theatre that really tried to indulge the audience's instincts.
Well, do you think that with interactive video games and reality TV shows, theatre needs to evolve to do something more audience participatory?
I think we exist now in a culture where we expect an event and we're much more curious and we have a bigger appetite for experiences that challenge us and that shake us up a little bit.
You make certain requests of your audience.
Yes. Yeah, we expect them to work for their show.
And you say everyone should go through by himself.
Yeah, I think that's actually...
We have to wear masks.
Yeah, that's a critical mechanic for it to work. I think that we want the audience to almost be to indulge themselves and to trust their instincts and to let the show lead them round. And it doesn't work if you're looking, worrying about your other half. You need to be selfish and actually just let a scent lead you down a corridor or let a sort of flicker of a performer in the distance.
Well, is it possible to miss key scenes?
It's absolutely possible. And it's actually our intention as theatre makers that audiences miss scenes. Part of the concept is that you are curious as an audience and you dig things out and that you follow your instinct and you follow what attracts you or you are repelled by what you're frightened of.
And how long do people particularly take to do all of this?
Well, again, we don't want to be too prescriptive. The shows last for 3 hours and we hope, I mean, there's enough material to watch it 4 times over. But we want the audience to feel when they're ready to leave.
Do you think that it's a good idea to prepare for the show, reread Macbeth?
I think it's really important that we're trying to create work that's totally accessible, whether you're a diehard Shakespeare academic or whether you go to galleries or you go to the cinema. It should work on different levels. Obviously, the more backstory you have, the more you're going to glean from.
I think the most important thing is for the audience to be open and to be ready to receive and to be ready to follow and to be ready to just indulge their whims and not be too concerned about trying to work something out psychologically.
Now, you did this in London.
We did originally in 2003 in over 20 rooms of a old Victorian boys' school.
But that was a real boys' school. In this case, you've kind of invented the McKittrick Hotel.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, the name comes from one of the Hitchcock films.
Yes, it does. I think the first two iterations of the show happened in derelict schools. So we had a natural architectural platform to leap from. But with this space that was more generic warehouse, we had to fictionalise that. So we came up with the hotel as a sort of a platform to build on top of, to give the show the detail and depth that it needed.
Well, Chelsea is probably a good place to do this because there are all of these empty spaces that lend themselves to this sort of thing, and they have a certain mystery to them as you walk down the street. Okay. You're going between one art gallery and another, and there are 6 buildings that seem to just be standing there doing nothing.
Yeah, it's blissfully anonymous as a space. The facade gives nothing away.
The space is very dark and cut up and kind of difficult to manage, especially with the limited vision of the masks. We're going up passageways and downstairs, and people are following some of the actors. And then I had the experience of following one of the actors, and another actor came down the same stairway going the other direction. And all the people following him were so anxious to not lose him that they were bumping into me and all the other people going in the wrong, what they thought was the wrong direction. That's part of it, too. People get really involved and almost desperate at times.
Yeah, I think people really start to kind of go really indulge their appetite and become more kind of hungry for what they want, and you know, the desire to kind of craft their own experience.
Some people have compared it to a kind of theme park haunted house. Do you encourage that?
No,
not
but
we
when you
that.
Keep it dark.
It's the darkness is to encourage a sense of intrepidation, that sort of childlike sense of exploring the illicit space that you're not really allowed to be in. And it's a fusion of installation art, contemporary dance, Shakespeare.
Also darkness. I mean, it makes you function as a human in a very different way. We kind of live in a visually dominated culture, and by placing the body in darkness, it makes the body react in very different ways.
My guests are Felix Barrett and Maxine Doyle, and we're talking about Sleep No More, which has become a big hit. It's on West 27th Street between 10th and 11th Avenues in Chelsea. And if you arrive somewhere between 7 and 8 o'clock, you'll know where it is because there's a long line outside the theater, people waiting to get in. Maxine, you were originally a choreographer, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm still a choreographer. I mean, all of the company actually are dancers as opposed to actors, or we like to kind of think of them as performers because their training is dance, but they're actual storytellers.
And so there's a lot of dance in this.
There's no text in this work. It's a reimagining of Macbeth through a choreographic and physical language.
And why Macbeth? Were you looking for a play that most people are familiar with?
We always look for a sort of a landmark text which everyone's got a root into, so you come knowing the backbone of it. And I think what excited us was the parallels between Macbeth and the sort of the 30s film noir landscape that we've layered on top of it.
But the whole idea of Shakespeare without language seems almost heretical.
Well, when we kind of pride ourselves on the fact that the show comes completely from the language, and although the language isn't spoken, it's there in the design, it's there in the detail of the choreography, it's there in the light, it's there in the sound, and we'd love scholars of the text to come and actually pinpoint Act 4, Scene 2 inside the space. Because
yeah,
I mean,
really, all we've taken away is the dialogue, actually, and Shakespeare is so much more than just the dialogue.
Well, have you seen Elevator Repair Services production of The Great Gatsby? They read the book verbatim, the whole book. This is another way of breaking through all of the walls of theater. But they've done every word, and you've done none of the words. Although people can read stuff along the way.
Yeah, quite a lot of the text is actually written and woven into letters, inscribed on walls, written on behind photographs.
Didn't the original version include plot and character elements from Hitchcock's Rebecca?
Yes, it did. And I think that was just us fusing two texts together. I think now we've made it a more broad, generic film noir landscape. But it was quite exciting seeing the parallels of, good old-fashioned Hitchcock romp. You know, the suspense and the tension and the powerful role of the female within that, and how it parallels with Macbeth.
And you mentioned art installations. I'd walk into a room and think, oh, gee, Anselm Kiefer was here, or Andy Goldsworthy, or Damien Hirst. Was that part of the idea as well?
I think I'm personally very influenced by Robert Wilson, theatre director, and he did some...
But he still has you sit in a seat.
He does, but actually he did...
Then bombards you.
He did an installation in London about 15 years ago, and it was exploring that inherent theatricality in the empty space, devoid of performers, but implied completely. And I think that's the sort of the side of installation we're leaning towards. We're aware of all the work out there, but we're not trying to pastiche or...
We were really interested in spaces that tell stories in their own right, in that sense that as an audience, you come into a room that's empty, but, you know, an intense situation might just have happened in there, and you can feel that as you enter the room. You can feel the atmosphere or the shift of atmosphere, you know, and it also we're excited by that sense that you enter a room and it as an audience and it's empty, it's installation, and then the next minute a scene topples in on top of you and the whole world is a series of questions again.
There's often a debate over whether Shakespeare should be performed with British accents or American accents. You don't have to worry about that here. Are your cast members Americans?
They're all Americans, yeah. Yeah.
Some are French.
What
about the all of those installations? Did you bring them from England or did you just create them here?
A lot of them are actually bespoke and have been created as a response to the space. Mm-hmm. Some are narrative-driven, some are responses to the text. But a lot of it is just a West Chelsea special.
One of the rooms, the Candy Room, seems too happy a place to come upon in a play related to Macbeth.
We thought out of 100 rooms, we needed one positive.
So how much candy do you go through in a week?
Quite a lot, yes.
There's also a bit of nudity here.
Yeah, there is.
But people could easily miss it all if they just are walking up a staircase when they should have... If they wanted to see the nudity, walk down the staircase.
The show is really, really choreographed and really, really tightly structured. So this sense of it should feel like the show is very spontaneous. It should feel like it's kind of chaotic, but actually it's really rigorously structured. So I think you might very well hear about the naked witch's orgy in the bar, and then you can then go and search it out and hunt it down for yourself if that's what you fancy.
Because that's where people can talk in the bar.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of recordings when I was there. The Ink Spots, Coleman Hawkins' Body and Soul. I heard a man singing, Is That All There Is? in a cabaret. Assumed that it was Macbeth doing the Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow speech, but one of my friends said that they saw a woman singing it.
Yeah.
There's two versions of that song in different parts of the space. One by a man, one by a woman.
Now you don't do much publicity for the play. You are here. Is there a reason for that? Is this do you want to encourage word of mouth?
Yeah, I think it's really important to us that the whole ethos of Punch Drunk is discovery. And if we go and shout from the rooftops and say, "Come and see our show," then we're defeating our principles at the first hurdle. And you know, we want them to feel that they've sort it out and they've got ownership of it.
Well, there are blogs now that advise people how to experience the play. Would that diminish it?
I think we're just touched that people you know, care about it enough to write about it. We, you know, we hope the best way to come and see it is knowing as little as possible and just to trust your sense of curiosity and follow your own path.
I've read that your friends Felix concocted an elaborate theater piece for you in honor of your marriage.
Yes.
So you do other things as well. You also celebrated the opening of a Louis Vuitton store in London.
Yeah.
Is that how you make money?
There's an element of the work that brands are interested in. So we've engaged in some projects where we can kind of research our theater, but through the use of brands.
And now you're doing a children's show, which would be a departure for you because previous shows don't allow anyone under 16.
This is for 6 to 12-year-olds only. Uh-huh. If you're 13 and over, you can't get in.
So how long is Sleep No More running?
We're selling tickets at the moment until mid-September.
And then you're sure you're going to close it or are you just going to keep on going as long as people want to come?
We'll see, yeah, if the demand's still there.
Well, one of the things that... might be encouraging is that a lot of the audience is younger than you usually see in theater, which would suggest that you're appealing to people who don't normally go to theater but who are interested in theater.
Yeah, we hope that this work kind of really does open itself up to all sorts of audiences, not just a theater audience or a dance audience, but a film audience.
And you are doing something about the unseen text, as you say.
Yeah, the unseen text is as interesting as the seen text, I think.
Well, people will be able to experience it at least through the summer. My great thanks to Felix Barrett and Maxine Doyle, co-directors of Sleep No More, which is on the far west of 27th Street in Chelsea, for coming by and talking with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.